Kinder and Harper Audio Australia present this unabridged recording of Last Woman Hanged, written by Caroline Overington and read by Jennifer Valetic. The dedication reads, "This book is dedicated to the memory of those women who fought so hard to save Louisa, and for so many of the rights that women enjoy today." Introduction. On the 8th of January, 1889, Louisa Collins, a 41-year-old mother of 10 children, became the first woman hanged at the Darlinghurst Jail and the last woman hanged in New South Wales. Dark-eyed, dark-haired, plump of figure, beautiful. All these words had been used to describe Louisa. Also, drunk. Louisa liked to drink brandy, and she liked to drink beer, and when she got drunk, she liked to dance by the light of the lamp, even as her many children crawled on the dirty floor around her feet. Louisa had twice been married and, unlucky for some, she had twice been widowed. Over six tense months in 1888, the centenary year in New South Wales, she was tried not once but four times for the murder of one or the other of her husbands. Some of the strongest evidence against Louisa came from her only daughter, tiny fair-haired May, who was just 10 years old when first asked by a judge of the Supreme Court to take the stand with a Bible in her hand and testify against her mother. The execution of Louisa Collins was ghastly, not only because executions generally are, or because Louisa was a woman, but because the hangman in New South Wales at that time, the gruesome, nosy Bob, was inept. He misjudged the length of the drop and nearly tore Louisa's head off. So terrible was the scene. Louisa was left to dangle for 20 minutes with blood dripping from a gaping wound in her throat, that no woman would ever again be hanged in New South Wales. The first question this book seeks to answer is perhaps the most obvious one. Did she do it? Was Louisa guilty? This requires a rigorous examination of the original evidence, including trial notes and forensic reports, most of which are stored at State Records New South Wales. The aim throughout has been to ensure that everything recorded here, as opposed to anything that might have been said about Louisa at the time, is true. Therefore, if a character says or does something on these pages, it is because they were recorded as saying or doing so at the time of Louisa's trials. That said, all evidence must be read in its historical context. Louisa Collins died at a time when women were in no sense equal under the law, except when it came to the gallows. Women could not vote. They could not sit in Parliament. There were no female judges, and no female jurors either. The space available for women to have their say, to express an opinion about capital punishment, for example, was limited. The space available to them to exercise real power in a legal and political sense was non-existent. Also important is the fact that Louisa was a poor woman, in debt even to the undertaker. The Crown, by contrast, was equipped with the best of the colony's barristers for all four trials. A story like this one, where both the stakes and the body count are high, inevitably features heroes and villains. To some extent, it will be for the reader to decide the category into which Louisa should fall. What is certain is that two of the colony's most powerful men, the Premier, Sir Henry Parkes, and His Excellency the Governor, Lord Carrington, ultimately declined to intervene on Louisa's behalf. In their absence, it fell to the little people, many of them women, to find the moral courage to try to save her life. Their argument was both passionate and compelling, and may today seem obvious, that a legal system comprised only of men, male judges, all-male jury, male prosecutor, governor, and premier, could not with any integrity hang a woman. The tenacity of these women would not, in the end, save Louisa Collins, but it would ultimately carry women from their homes in the new colony of New South Wales all the way to Parliament.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?